Chapter 4. The two railguns at the 20-kilometer margin each contained 9 kinetic energy slugs, their normal operational load. The magazines contained 10 rounds, but since the rounds were manufactured in batches and the loading process required partial disassembly and reassembly of the gun, it was always considered necessary to fire one test shot to verify that the rounds had been machined within tolerance and that the guns had been put back together correctly. Fortunately, there had been no false alarms, since these guns were reloaded, a difficult, dangerous, time-consuming job in its own right, and so there was only one empty slot in each magazine. The gun's normal muzzle velocity was 100 kilometers per second, far in excess of Michaelmas's escape velocity. That was a consequence of their original use, defending ships against high-speed collisions. They needed quick reaction times and extreme penetrating power to shatter micrometeorites into harmless ions. That made them good as anti-ship defenses, not that they had ever been tested in that capacity, but not so effective against over-the-horizon targets like our two suits. To function in that mode, the gun's muzzle velocities needed to be dropped by a factor of 10, preventing the slugs from flying off into interplanetary space, going into orbit around Michaelmas, or hurling themselves halfway around the world before coming back to ground. With the muzzle velocity damped, it was possible to aim a slug at a point only tens of kilometers away, out of the line of sight, but only just over the horizon. But the downside was that the penetrating force was also much reduced. Kinetic energy fell off with the square of velocity, so a tenfold reduction in muzzle velocity meant a hundredfold drop in stopping power. Still, what could stop a ship should also be able to stop a suit, even if it was a hundredth of its usual effectiveness. But with just 18 slugs, and no means of reloading the guns in anything less than a day, we had to consider each shot carefully. I still wanted some explanation for the suits that allowed us to avoid destroying them. I was even hopeful that Brianna Betancourt might dredge something up in our next meeting. But until such clarification was forthcoming, or an overture came from the suits themselves, whoever had sent them, we had to proceed on the assumption of hostile intent. It was agreed that the first two shots, sent in quick succession but not simultaneously, would be lobbed to fall short of the suits by about a kilometer, presenting no danger to the suits but providing a clear demonstration of our capabilities. Two shots arriving in the same spot meant that we could demonstrate the repeatability of our aiming. If that deterrent failed, the next two lobs would fall closer still. If those failed, the next pair of shots would be intended to land exactly on the suits. The suits had passed out of reach of the first set of eyes, but Cantor and the other analysts still had their seismophone readings. The signals were faint, but just strong enough to enable triangulation to within an error margin about 20 meters across. That was too imprecise to guarantee a kill, but good enough for the purposes of our warning shots. I assigned all necessary authority to Chung, and was not even back at the infirmary when the lights wavered. That was the railgun sucking power from our already strained generators. The passenger had sensed it too. She was awake and alert.
"I didn't think you'd come back quite so quickly, Miguel. Is everything all right?"
I put on a smile under my mask. "Why wouldn't it be all right?"
"There was a power dip just now. I wondered if there was a problem with your settlement."
I eased into the seat next to her. "You'll have to get used to a lot more than the occasional flicker. Sometimes we have to go on to emergency power for days at a time. We use flywheels, deep underground. They used to be part of the maneuvering system of the Salmasis, but now they help us ride out power interruptions. They can't run indefinitely, though. Sometimes it gets dark and cold in these caverns."
"Perhaps I'd be better off going back into the casket."
"No, never that. But it's probably going to be a harder life than anything you experienced on Haven. We have very basic medicine. We get by on a restricted diet, though it meets our nutritional needs. And when we get a bad year, we have to go on to double rationing, as if our normal conditions weren't enough of a challenge. We haven't allowed children to be born in Sun Hollow in 12 years.
"Then you're not going to live very long."
"We have a little while left."
"Do you have children, Miguel? I can't remember if I asked you before."
I don't have my own children, no. But my wife has a daughter from her previous marriage. Her name is Victorine. She's as dear to me as if she were my own.
And your wife?
Nicola. I tensed. This was supposed to be about our guest, not my own background. Brianna, do you remember what I asked you the last time we spoke, about two people who might have been part of your expedition? She constructed the frown again, forming those even symmetrical dimples in her brow.
I tried to remember, but it's still hard to bring these things into focus. Maybe if you told me a little more about what you know.
I reached for the package I had brought into the room. It was a flat, book-sized box with tattered edges. I set it onto her bed, dutifully avoiding any sort of contact, and opened the box. I took out a folding board with perforated holes and a bag of colored pegs. She looked at me with over-embellished delight, as if I had tipped a bounty of treasure onto the sheet.
You brought a game. Do you like games? I like games.
I had someone go to my house and fetch it. I thought it might help to unblock some mental pathways if you have something else to focus on. I jammed two sets of colored pegs into their starting positions, then explained the extremely rudimentary rules.
I see it, Miguel. It's not too complicated. I think we can play right now.
Perhaps a warm-up game?
If you say so.
I let her go first, and went easy on her during the opening moves. It was a simple game, but that did not mean that there were not layers of complexity buried within it. Traps and subtleties waiting to spring out like vipers. While we took turns, I edged the conversation around to some of the things that had been troubling me. Troubling all of us, in fact, since her rescue. I asked you about what had happened before the explosion. You didn't remember, but maybe it would help if I explained our difficulty.
Please, ask whatever you wish.
Our ships were traveling towards each other with a combined closing speed of thousands of kilometers per second, more than 2% of the speed of light.
That doesn't seem terribly fast.
It isn't. Not for interstellar ships like the Silence in Heaven, but it's very fast for anything moving through a solar system. After the explosion, your casket should have kept moving with about the same relative speed as the original ship, give or take a margin of error. But it didn't. It ended up on a velocity vector much closer to that of my own ship. Granted, I still needed time to match my speed and position with yours, but it was feasible to do it.
Lucky for me.
Lucky for you indeed. The peg game carried on. My opponent had made some predictably poor moves in the opening rounds, but now she was making up for it, putting me under pressure. A quick learner, I thought to myself, or just possibly someone who had not needed to learn the game at all. There's another odd factor, Brianna. Somehow, you were able to send a distress signal to my ship, but it wasn't picked up by any other of our receivers.
Perhaps they're not working as well as you'd wish.
Or perhaps you managed to locate my ship and aim a very narrow communications beam at it. She broke off from pondering her next move. Any one of the available options was likely to put her at an advantage over me. A look of slow puzzlement came upon her face.
You seem not quite to trust me.
I want to trust you, I said. That's normal when you risk your life to save someone, and I risked all of ours by not shooting you out of the sky when I had a chance. But you're not making it easy. I paused. That power dip you registered. It was two of our guns, firing kinetic energy slugs over the horizon.
To what purpose?
To send a message to a pair of suits that are walking towards us, across the surface of Michaelmas. I watched her reaction as carefully as I could, hoping for some fracture in that flawless armor. Two empty suits, as near as we can judge. It can't be a coincidence that you've all arrived on Michaelmas at the same time. Those suits must have come from the Silence in Heaven, just like you. And like you, they must know more about us than we'd like to think. You knew about my ship. These suits know about the location of Sun Hollow.
And the message you meant to deliver?
Stop. Come no closer until you've declared your intentions.
You think that will persuade them?
I reflected on my answer. More that I worry about what those suits are going to contain in the future. We played on for a few more moves, with my chances of drawing against her, let alone defeating her, diminishing to distant theoretical possibilities.
How would that work, exactly? Do you think someone's going to get inside those suits and then go somewhere?
I don't know. I'm currently trying very hard not to rule anything out.
Right answer.
I'm sorry.
I mean that right now, you can't help wondering if I've got something to do with the suits. So you're very wisely leaving your options open.
I can't help but draw a connection, I said, regarding her with faint unease. Do you have other friends out there who sent you to us, who need to get you back?
I think if I had friends, I'd remember them.
We entered the endgame. Although I could have drawn it out for a few more moves, it would only have delayed the inevitable. I made my last move, a deliberate sacrifice.
You let me win,
she protested. No, I just spared us both a drawn-out bloodbath. I could never win from the position you put me in.
I think you give in too easily. Perhaps that was always your central weakness.
She uttered these words as if they were a normal continuation of our conversation, rather than some blindsiding swerve.
Each of you had your faults, but that was yours.
Each of us. She grabbed my fingers before I could withdraw my hand from the board. Although I was wearing surgical gloves, her nails bit through the fabric, digging into my skin. There was a sharp pressure, then she relaxed her grip. I snatched back my hand, as startled and dumbfounded by that as I had been by her words.
What the hell are you? I was wondering how long it would take you to ask.
She smiled, watching as I rubbed the wounded hand, feeling where she had punctured both the glove and the flesh beneath it.
You needn't worry. That was a formality. No harm will come of it.
What are you? I asked again.
Who sent you?
She laughed once.
I sent me.
She spread the fingers of her hand, the ones that had just punctured my glove. One by one, the nails were turning black, not along a gradient from top to bottom, but as if each were a screen, filling with interstellar darkness. I got out of the room, still rubbing my hand. Gyu was standing next to an orderly, leafing through some patient notes, seemingly unaware of anything that had happened with the passenger.
Are you all right, administrator?
I sealed the door behind me. Get security here and don't let anyone into that area. She moves from that bed, tries anything at all, they put a Bose pulse through her neck.
You've changed your tune.
I tore off the glove, showing Kirgyu my palm. She just did something to me. Jabbed her nails into my skin, and then her nails turned black. I don't think she put a toxin into me, unless it's really slow acting, but I ought to be feeling the effects by now. And why would she use a slow-acting toxin? My voice was racing, and so was my heart. But I put both of these effects down to nervous excitement, rather than anything swimming in my blood.
We missed something. Those nails of hers must be artificial.
What did they do to you?
I don't know.
Perhaps you should quarantine me. If she's brought an infectious agent into Sun Hollow.
We didn't miss anything, administrator.
But Kirgyu had already pressed the emergency summons button, calling assistance down from Sanctum. Alma Chung arrived first, carrying a small Bosa pistol, and behind her came three more heavily equipped and armored Sanctum security personnel, with eczema rifles, stun truncheons, and axes. Just behind them, puffing, was a ruddy-cheeked Morgan Valois.
What the hell, old man?
The passenger was still in bed, idly moving the pegs in and out of the pegboard, whispering something to herself.
Situation?
Alma Chung demanded.
We've been set up in some way,
I floundered, still trying to assemble the facts into something that made passing sense. She's not what she seems. I showed them both my palm.
I think I've been sampled.
Her nails are some kind of analysis system. Micro-laboratories. Nanotechnology.
What the hell?
We scanned her, didn't we, Dr. Kirgyu?
There was nothing. No implants, no prosthetic augmentation, neither mechanical nor biological.
I saw something, I insisted, inside her.
Your mirage again, Kirgyu said.
I waved my palm. If she can do this, then what else can she do? She hid one thing, she can hide another. Maybe I just got a glimpse of something before she gained control.
We played back the recording, Kirgiu reminded me.
Then she was able to retroactively alter it, I said, shivering a little at the idea. She dropped her guard for an instant, made an error, corrected it. Chung's guards were pressing against the glass, checking the readiness of their weapons.
Orders?
Chung asked. Go in, surround her, but don't touch her. Make it plain that she's only one mistake away from being shot dead. And watch out for those nails. When she was satisfied that the passenger was under armed restraint and unlikely to do any further harm, Chung joined Valois and me in the Red Room, gathered around the glowing map of the status table, with its radial markings, surface contours, and illuminated marker prisms. Cantor and the other analysts were working hard to keep the table updated, their voices low but urgent, like surgical assistants during a difficult operation.
You'd better get that Sintu, Valois was saying.
Later, I answered, shaking away the tingle in my palm where I could still feel the puncture wounds. Whatever she did to me, it's done. Did the over-the-horizon shots work?
They struck, Valois said carefully.
Two warning shots, two closer strikes, and the two that were meant to stop them dead. The seismometers took a little time to clear after all those impacts. The suits are still coming. For certain. Both suits, same gate. No sign of damage from the seismic traces. It's as if they walked right through the bombardment and nothing touched them. I nodded and tried to find something to cling to. Then our positional estimates were off. We still have 6 slugs in each railgun, don't we? Once they come over the horizon, they can aim more accurately, and we can dial them up to full power.
I hope so,
Valois said. Chung narrowed her eyes.
Why would you only hope so?
Because I can't help feeling our passenger knows our capabilities almost as well as we do.
Valois shot me a wary look. Next time you find a waif and stray out among the stars, old man, perhaps leave it there. I don't know who or what you've brought into our nest, but she's not welcome.
If I'd known.
The oldest litany in the book.
But his demeanor shifted to one of sympathy. I'd have done the same for what it's worth. We're hiding from monsters, not trying to become them.
But she might be one,
Chung said, reflecting for a moment before continuing.
What's our assessment? Could she be the thing we feared all along? A wolf construct? A biological infiltration measure?
She's something else, I said with certainty.
You know this, Administrator? Or you feel it?
Just before she grabbed me, she spoke to me in a way that made it feel personal, as if her interest lay in me, rather than Sun Hollow. That's not how a wolf construct would operate. They regard us as vermin, not individuals.
Perhaps they're evolving new strategies, Valois said.
There's a thing inside that biological body, the object I saw in her ribcage. There was easily room in it for a magnetic pen and a few grains of antimatter. It wouldn't even need to be a powerful bomb to destroy all of Sun Hollow. A mini nuke would be more than sufficient. So why not let it off the moment she arrived? Valois scratched under his nose.
Intelligence gathering?
Unless she's using a wolf communication channel we don't know about, no signals can escape beyond Michaelmas, Chung replied. You know this, Morgan. Her subtext. Do not waste my time voicing untestable hypotheses. I caught Cantor's eye. Time until line of sight acquisition? About 30 minutes, Administrator, depending on the exact path the suits follow. Do you want to issue another warning, or engage on sight? We have 6 slugs left in each gun. 12 in total. That should be more than enough, but I don't want a single slug wasted. Decapitating those suits may not be enough to stop them, so reserve fire until at least half the suit is over the horizon. Understood? Understood, Administrator. Chung said, I'd like to begin moving a security detachment to the far end of the 20-kilometer tunnel, in case those suits try and force their way in. If we move now, there's time to set up a defensive position with the heavy Breitenbachs. The team can also lay demolition charges to collapse the tunnel if the suits make it through the lock.
I had vetoed Cantor's earlier suggestion of meeting the suits halfway, but now there was no doubt in my mind as to their hostile nature. Short of the railguns, the portable Breitenbach cannons were our heaviest anti-personnel weapons. They had never been used. I had always thought that if we did have cause to use them, the fight was already lost. "Provided they have time to fall back to safety," I said. Chung had taken the initiative of having her team already assigned and prepared, waiting for the order to begin moving down the tunnel. A couple of electric carts would get them to the firelock in just under 20 minutes, leaving a small margin of error before we expected visual contact with the suits. I left Chung to coordinate that part of our response while Valwa and I returned to the infirmary. Not much had changed since I was last there. Chung's security detachment were in the revival area, forming a cordon around the bend, their pistols and rifles aimed at the passenger. She was sitting up, musing over the pegboard game, apparently oblivious to the armed presence. "Has she done or said anything?" I asked Kyrgyu. "No, it's as if she's in a bubble." She reached for a surgical kit she had been keeping open until I arrived. "I will look at that hand of yours, whether you like it or not. Later. Administrator, is it possible that this is a bit of an overreaction?" Ignoring me, she inspected my palm and dabbed the wounds with a strong-smelling salve. "Of course it's not an overreaction. You saw what happened with her nails. We've examined the recordings we took during her extraction from the casket. The nails were black." "How about you examine your memories instead?" I snatched my hand back. "She can alter our recording systems. That points to a cybernetic capability, something like a conjoiner. You say that we didn't see implants in her skull. I think all that points to is an extremely developed ability to manipulate our scanning devices, altering their data to show us what she wants us to see. I think she can do that in real time and alter retrospective records almost as quickly." "I didn't think we were at war with the conjoiners," Kyrgyu said, reclaiming my hand and persisting in her examination. "A bit hard to be at war with a group who aren't around anymore," Valois said, not disputing her point. "And there wouldn't be any cause for this, even if they were back again. So we had a few fallings out, a few wars, but we're all on the same side against the wolves. Everything else is just ideological nitpicking." "I'm not saying she is one," I said testily. "I'm saying she has similar capabilities, and we need to be ready for them."
"Damn it, Kyrgyu, that stings!"
"Capabilities aside, what is it she wants?" Valois continued mildly, indifferent to my suffering.
"I think I need to know."
I sighed, letting Kyrgyu get on with her work. "I'm going in there again. Give me something in a syringe. Something that will act quickly."
"To kill her?"
"No. Just knock her out fast. But whatever dose you think you've calibrated, double it." I went in with the syringe in my hand. It was loaded with a watery blue fluid whose identity and potency I knew better than to question. I gestured for the armed guards to move back from the bed slightly, allowing me to move closer to the passenger. She smiled as I approached, setting down the pegboard as if it were many hours since we had spoken, and my return a welcome development.
"How long?"
she asked brightly.
"How long until what?"
"Until your railguns achieve line-of-sight acquisition. I think it must be in the region of 12 to 13 minutes by now."
She shook her head.
"I wouldn't bother. You'd be better off keeping those slugs for another day, and for use against a target you actually have a chance of slowing. Notice I said slowing, not stopping. Good to be realistic."
I was fast. Perhaps she had seen the syringe, perhaps she had not. But I had it tight against her neck before she could flinch. Kyrgyu had given me one of the thicker, blunter needles, so I could press it in without immediately puncturing the skin. No more games.
"Not even checkers. I like that game. I like most games."
With my other hand, I slapped the pegboard to the floor. "Don't test my patience, Brianna. Should I call you that, or should I accept it was never your name, just an identity you stole for the purposes of this infiltration?"
"Oh, please,"
she said, rolling those dark eyes.
No crocodile tears, Miguel de Reiter. You were on the verge of killing thousands of people. Every single sleeper on that ship. So I took one name just to grease my way into your trust. That's not even a crime. She was already dead.
My missile didn't kill that ship. I didn't kill it. And I'm increasingly doubtful that a sudden engine failure had anything to do with it either. She frowned, making a deliberately exaggerated display of incomprehension.
But then, what did destroy it?
There's another ship in this system. One we haven't seen.
Right answer,
she declared excitedly. It's probably the same ship that dropped those suits into Michaelmas. Probably the same one that put you within reach of my shuttle. In case she had forgotten it was there, I increased pressure on the syringe. You arrived independently of the incomer, didn't you? Your ship used the noise and fury of the silence in heaven as cover, if that was even the real name of the incomer.
I was coming, anyway,
she said.
That other ship happened to arrive at the same time. Very bad form. I won't deny that they were slightly useful in providing a limited distraction. But the direct threat that they posed to you, to Sun Hollow, was far more than I could allow to pass.
You admit it, then. You murdered those people.
There's no moral distinction between us, Miguel. You were prepared to murder those people. I just happened to be the one who actually did it. History doesn't care about thwarted intentions, only what we mean to do. Would we say that the Butcher of Tharsis was a good man, if only he hadn't followed through on his war crimes?
I ignored her question. When we spoke before, you seemed to have an interest in me.
Did I?
Any one of us could have volunteered for that operation. Even if I mean something to you, you couldn't have known who would be in that shuttle.
No, but I wasn't going to take the chance of letting any of you die, she said. Not when I knew that there were unlikely to be more than a few thousand of you in these caverns. Besides, you settled the matter for me ahead of time. Cydonia.
Now it was my turn to frown, and it was genuine. What?
The verification password for your suicide protocol. I read your onboard telemetry. Your shielding measures are nowhere near as foolproof as you think.
Cydonia was a random code word. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, it means infinitely more than you realize, dear Miguel de Reiter.
Who are you? And what do you want?
I'm...
The name seemed to stall on her lips. Even with the syringe pressed against her, she swiveled her eyes around the room, moving her head minutely as her gaze scanned.
Let's see. It's on the tip of my tongue. Ceiling? No, that's not it. Floor? Wall? Not quite.
Then her attention locked on to the partition, the transparent screen beyond which Kyrgyu and Valois were still watching.
Ah, yes. Of course. How could I have forgotten?
She smiled with a fierce, avaricious delight.
Glass. My name is Glass. And I've come for you, Miguel. You're the only thing I want from Sun Hollow.
Then you've made a mistake.
How so?
You're alone and unarmed. Maybe there's something inside you that can hurt us. But if it's a bomb, you'll be taking yourself with it. Your suits are about to be destroyed.
Certain of that?
Totally.
I wouldn't be. Let me help you with that syringe.
Her hand was on mine before I could react. She had moved so quickly it was as if she had jumped between frames. I made to maintain pressure on her neck, expecting my hand to be forced away. But I had misunderstood her intention. She closed her fingers around the syringe's plunger and injected herself. Good. You've saved me the trouble.
Was it meant to kill me?
You'll find out in a few seconds. I eased back from the bed, content to let the drug take its toll. Whether the dose knocked her unconscious immediately or took a few seconds, I was in no doubt as to the outcome. But as she regarded me, her composure unruffled, my skin began to tingle.
I'm analyzing it. Interesting blend of chemicals. They break down into harmless metabolic products very readily.
I made an executive decision. I snatched the Boza pistol from the hand of the nearest guard, checked that it was set to maximum yield, and leveled the fat muzzle in the direction of her head. My hand shook slightly, as it always did, but at such close range there was little danger of missing.
I'll do it, Glass. I'll blow your head off.
Will you manage that as well as you handled the execution of Rurik Tain?
She nodded earnestly.
Yes, I've read the political reports.
I found my way into your sealed archives very easily.
Really, though, it wasn't your fault. Your hands were tied when it came to his sentencing. It was a capital offence to attempt to organise a coup within Sun Hollow. The best you could do was arrange some leniency for his allies, that political amnesty for his family. As always, you were trying to be a good man in a difficult office. It was his insistence that his execution be a public affair. His request that you be the one to carry out the sentence.
Stop.
She carried on.
You could have refused that request, of course, deputized it to another functionary. There was nothing in your legislation that said you had to bow to his craven attention-seeking demands,
but you felt you had to rise to the occasion.
He'd been your friend once, a valued ally in those difficult early days. So you agreed to put a Bowser pulse through his skull, which might have gone well, had he not also refused to wear a hood, so that you had no choice but to look into his face.
Her lips creased in false sympathy.
Oh dear, that didn't help, did it?
My finger tightened on the trigger.
Shut up.
Your hands shake.
Peripheral nerve damage from the years you spent working with pneumatic drills on the excavation teams, opening up new living space. Even as you led these people, you were one of them, always ready to get dirt under your nails. But that civic-mindedness failed you when you most needed it.
Rurik's face, the pressure of the moment, all those eyes on you. Your hand shook when you shot him. Your pulse went wide, ripped the side of his face off, but didn't kill him. Valois had to do that. You were too busy crumpling up into a ball, unable to process what had happened. Everything collapsed in on you at that moment. The mistake you'd never recover from. The mistake you had to atone for by offering your life to protect your people.
I squeezed the trigger. The Bowser pistol clicked in my hand, flashed an error status. Glass said,
"There's nothing I can't reach. Nothing I can't control. I've already pushed my influence into every part of Sun Hollow. Do you know the disappointing part? It wasn't even difficult. Your defences are like paper walls."
I lowered the pistol, certain it was useless, certain that every other powered weapon was equally compromised.
"That's very good, Glass,"
I said, reaching for one of the axes. I raised it, making ready to swing down.
"I wouldn't,"
she said calmly.
"Not if you want Nicola and Victorine to live. Not if you want any of your friends to live."
The lights faded, leaving us in a darkness far deeper than the power dips that attended the activation of the railguns. With that darkness came a jarring silence, the background sibilance of air circulation suddenly absent. A second passed, then the lights and life support sounds returned, but the light was somehow sickly, the sounds maliciously off-key.
"I can do that,"
Glass said. "I can do it throughout Sun Hollow. Kill me, and you'll never get your systems restarted again in time. You'll freeze and suffocate.
Put the axe down before you do something stupid."
"The stupid thing was rescuing you."
"Perhaps,"
she allowed.
"But out of it, some good may come."
She sighed, modulating her tone to one of companionable reassurance.
"I only want you, Miguel. I've no interest in hurting any part of Sun Hollow. Quite the contrary. I very much hope this little pocket of humanity makes it through the night. There aren't many others."
"You'd know."
"Yes, I'd know. I've been to places, seen places, and so shall you. We're going to go on a journey, you and I, to a place called Charybdis. But just the two of us, no one else. We shall have each other all to ourselves."
"Why?"
"Because we have wolves to kill."
She smiled at my bafflement.
"Now, Shall I tell you what's going to happen? Nothing you do is going to stop those suits. They'll make their way here, and you and I shall leave in them. Before they arrive, though, you have a little time. Use it wisely. Make your fond farewells.
What happens if I resist?
The more trouble you make for me, the more likelihood that lives will be lost. Now, I don't want that to happen, but I do want you, and if there is a cost to be paid.
She looked at me sharply.
What are you waiting for? Use the time left to you. You won't get it again.